Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Winchester Radio of the Friday evening for us. We're glad you're here listening. We had a great listening response to our last podcast with Blade Runners, and tonight we have Mother's Little Helper, the 17th episode, to talk about. Good episode, distinguished because it is the supernatural directing debut of Misha Collins. And I think for a first effort on Supernatural, I think he did a good job. Lucky him, he was not in the episode as Castiel. Well, I guess we can get started out talking about Mother's Little Helper. We do not have a guest this evening, so we can take call-in questions and comments. That number is 347-205-9801. We are at blogtalkradio.com/mediaboulevard, but you can find out everything about the podcast and Supernatural news, cast, characters, t-shirts on our website, winchesterbros.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. That is Winchester Bros on both places. And thank you very much, and let's get started on the episode, Mother's Little Helper, named for, I would assume, the Rolling Stones song of the same name. Great song.
Valium is always a good time, so.
Yeah, and Mother's Little Helper is a nice way of putting it.
Those views do not necessarily reflect those of Winchester Bros and Media Boulevard.
It's a joke. I've never taken Valium in my life.
I'm teasing.
Wait, have I? I don't know. I've been in the hospital before. Now, disclaimer, hold on. It's because I'm allergic to morphine. So that's why I have to think about it.
Well, you know, it's funny because last episode, I believe Blade Runners, they used the song by Lou Reed, Heroin. This mm-hmm. is Valium. We should say, basically, do not try this at home. Supernatural or the Winchester Radio podcast does not endorse the use of recreational pharmaceuticals to get you through the season.
We don't endorse the recreational use of medicinal or illegal drugs. Just don't do it.
Okay.
And I have to say that any television show that has demonic nuns, you know you're in for a good time.
This is true.
This is true.
Nothing better than a good demonic nun. I thought it was...
or a whole group of them.
Yeah.
What do you call a group of demonic nuns? There should be a word for that.
So it does explain a lot about a couple of nuns I had in grade school.
Yes.
Anyway, so we got backstory in this episode with both Henry Winchester and his fellow woman of letters at the time, Josie Sands, taken over by Abaddon. And we found out that Josie was not Abaddon's first choice for a meat suit. It was Henry. And in following in the great tradition of Winchester men of having a woman sacrifice something for them, Josie stepped in and said, take me, and let Henry go. Now, he was not conscious at the time, which I'm thinking, again, he would have followed the great Winchester family tradition, or maybe he started it, of just sacrificing himself for the cause and said, I'll take Abaddon. But we don't know because he was unconscious at the time. Another Winchester family tradition of being unconscious during big dramatic moments.
Whatever do you mean?
So, story on her. And nice job by Elena Hoffman, going from Josie to very badass evil Abaddon.
And in a habit.
In a habit, looking demonic in a nurse's habit, nun's habit, which is not easy.
No, she is always fantastic though. So
yes,
can't really expect anything less of her. No pressure on her.
Yeah,
but you know,
it's interesting because all along, because. The first time we met Abaddon, we met her through Josie. Josie's a woman. We thought of her as a woman all this time because she was in Josie. And it's like how we think of Meg always taking a female meat suit. But this particular demon, Knight of Hell, was going to take Henry.
And she'd already taken a woman before because Abaddon had possessed Colette.
Yes,
with Cain. So we're just going. One of the things that I've always kind of liked about Supernatural is that demons don't have gender issues, which I think is really, really cool. You know, sucks to be the vessel, you know, because you don't have anything to say. But wait, I'm not female. You really probably shouldn't possess me since you're a female demon. That'd be awkward. They're like, yeah, we don't care. But. I always like that. It's a complete non-issue for demons, and I assume for angels. Who knows with angels? But I assume that
they are junkless.
A good vessel is a good vessel.
That's right.
It reminds me of Sajan on Angel. Because he was always making sure that we knew he was a masculine demon, you know, flitting about in a masculine way, he would say, you know. So it kind of reminds me of that. Great guest actors in this episode, besides, you know, Elena, who's always great, and Gil McKinney, who was Grandpa Winchester there. But
we had Jenny
really
O'Hara.
Jenny O'Hara, yes. It was great to see her. She did an awesome job.
I got super excited when I saw her because this is my confession. I actually really, really love King of Queens, one of my favorite sitcoms because they're just, if you've never watched King of Queens, watch it in syndication because you think it's just this annoying, like, stereotypical New Yorker kind of show. But no, it's so dysfunctional. It's fantastic. But she plays the lead character's mom, so she doesn't come out all the time, but when she does, she's so good. And, yeah, I got super excited.
She's terrific. She's been in everything.
I think it was last year she was on Rizzoli and Isles playing a nun. She was Sister Winifred something. So I was like, hey, she's got some experience there.
She played a very terrifying principal from years ago. Was it Frost principal? Probably. Yeah, but she was pretty scary on there.
Yeah.
Well, before I watched the episode, because number one, I'm Mountain Standard Time, and two, my DVR decided to not record this episode. So before I watched it, I saw everyone on Twitter going, oh my God, it's that woman from Everything. Who is it? So by the time I finally saw it, she came out, I was like, it's Jenny O'Hara, everybody, God. which is funny because Becky can attest that I'm actually the worst person when it comes to that. So I'm like, yes, it's that person who's on that show with that guy, and it was funny, you know. So
yeah,
the fact that
like
I was strange. So proud of myself. Yeah, I was so proud of myself.
Yeah, she's been in everything. I was just looking down her credits and... She was in a couple episodes of Roswell. I'm having Roswell nostalgia from the picture Katie Hegel tweeted yesterday.
I've been having Roswell emotions for, like, days now. Just want to roll around in Roswell. I know this is not the podcast for that, but
yes,
I want to roll around in Roswell.
I really liked the actress who played Mother Superior as well.
She was really good.
Mm-hmm.
I know I recognize her. I'm looking at her on IMDb, and probably from she used to be on Reaper. That show was on for
I don't
a while.
Know what I recognize her from because I never watched Reaper.
She's, again, she's one of those that's been in everything. Oh, she was a nurse in the X-Files episode Memento Mori.
Oh,
I think she was in Fringe.
You watched Fringe.
Fringe. I watched, the first half of the first season of Fringe. I don't think that counts as watching Fringe.
She was in...
I didn't watch it either,
I've been doing a Fringe rewatch, and... Yeah, I've been doing a Fringe rewatch, and I just watched the episode of Fringe she was in last night, so.
No, my only Fringe thing is that I went to a Fringe, the farewell Fringe panel at Comic-Con 2 years ago, and it made me wish I had watched the show because they were fantastic, but
no.
Oh, I saw Fringe film once. We saved the wardrobe. Sort of counts, right? See?
Totally.
It's like, well, it's on my list, you know, someday when I win the lotto and I can live the life of leisure and watch every TV show and movie. I own a DVD for or would like to own a DVD for, so Fringe is on there.
Yeah, just too much TV, too little time.
That's true.
But, and the side story for this episode was, I feel weird saying this because as much as I love the actors that were involved in the Nun story, I enjoyed the Dean Crowley stuff so much more.
It's Dean and Crowley. I mean, you gotta love Dean and Crowley whenever they're together.
It's true. I mean, you have to love Crowley when he's with anybody because Mark Shepard. Mark Shepard's going to be, he's going to be flawless no matter what.
He's so manipulative. Crowley, Mark Shepard. Maybe Mark
Shepard. He and Jensen are playing the storyline extremely well off of each other. It's beyond impressive.
Jensen is starting to show the effects of the Mark of Cain more and more. You know, to me, at the beginning when Sam is trying to persuade Dean to come with him on this case, and you can see Dean very focused, but you can see just under the surface he's shaking and thinking about the Mark of Cain and not wanting to think about it, and he's spoiling with all these new feelings and emotions and everything from the Mark of Cain and what he wants, and probably rage and darkness, and he's just barely hanging on, even though he doesn't look like it. And I think Jensen's doing a very good job of showing it and letting it bleed through occasionally a little bit.
It's funny that you say boiling because I was thinking simmering. Because it is ever so slight.
Mm-hmm.
It's just
this
under the surface little thing that he's doing. It kind of makes you pull away from Dean and just go, you're making me really uncomfortable right now.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the intention.
Yes. And I think whether Sam realizes it or consciously or subconsciously, he knows something is different, something has changed. And instead of him being angry and wanting to be by himself and going back in his room and shutting the door and not wanting to talk, now he's the one coming to Dean, are you coming on the case? And then Dean finally convinces him, no, I'm not going, and he's working on the research, and Sam just stares at him and then bangs his hand on the table, and then not hard, just enough to sort of drag the papers along, the thing, like trying to get a little more attention from Dean, not quite willing to walk away. And this is a different Sam than we've seen lately, because
I'm going to hold absolutely every thought, feeling, opinion about Sam until the finale, or else I will have a rage blackout on our podcast, and it will be not, it will be so unattractive for everybody involved. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, I have to say what, and this is not Sam related at all, so this should be good. my very favorite thing in this whole entire episode was seeing Alan Sawkins in it.
Yes, we love Alan.
Yes.
Oh, Alan is, he's such a friend of ours. You know, everybody here on the podcast at Winchester Brothers, we just love Alan. And just get it, you know, he was in an episode of Psych a few months ago. For those who don't know him, he was Deacon Jim in Divine, the series, the web series that Misha was in and Ivan Hayden created, Jason Fisher, Kirk Jacks, everybody. And then, you know, to see Alan show up in an episode of Supernatural, that was just so flippin' amazing. It was just, I was just tickled to see him. And he had, you know, he had two scenes. He didn't get killed off in his first one. He was in there twice. So, it was just excellent to see him, and I hope we get to see him in more.
Mm. And it's strange because all three of us have been to conventions, and so we've met the cast, we've met the crew, we've met, you know, but it was really weird to see Alan be like, I know him.
He's like an actual friend. You know?
Yeah, that's my friend. So it was a completely different feeling to be like, yes, I've met Jared, I've met Jensen, we've spoken, yes, yes. It was very, very different.
I have not had a chance to meet him yet, but I wish I could. We have very lovely conversations on Twitter sometimes. And he's like the nicest, sweetest man. And then, of course, actor, of course, and seeing him in this episode, soulless, you know.
Yes.
Very different, but it was great. It was so great to see him. So.
And for those who don't know who Alan was in the episode, he was the van driver. The guy with the white hair and the beard doing the van. That was Alan.
Yes. For St. Bonaventure, the creepy convent.
And you can follow Alan on Twitter at Alan Sawkins. That's AlanSawkins. He's great. He always has some wonderful, inspirational tweets. So give him a follow. Mm-hmm. You'll enjoy it.
And how about Crowley manipulating Dean through the entire episode? And I confess, he got me about the hunter, the supposed hunter, the demon hunter.
Me too. I didn't suspect that.
Either. And I really thought, and it's so, maybe because it was so typically Dean to see someone he recognized as a hunter struggling and try to give him the benefit of his experience. And the guy played it pretty well, and I just didn't even realize that he was actually working for Crowley and was a test. So I'm not 100% sure what the test was,
that I took it as a test was that Dean will choose for Crowley to live as an ally right now rather than allow him to be taken out. I think it would have been slightly more successful if it hadn't been a rookie hunter, if the hunter would have been like, no, I've done this, like, this is fine, and have Dean try to worm out of that instead of it being so easy as, you know, I don't think you have the experience, kid, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the point came across just fine, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm sorry, it's a slight shallow break from episode discussion, but there was just something about Dean racking the pool balls with his arms. Like, you know, No rack, no problem. My arms
yeah,
in the
that
spine
was,
of the pool table. I was like, ooh.
That was just, that was one of those things where you're like, I didn't know I would ever think that's attractive. I feel like if I saw a guy do that in real life, I'd be like, you're such a douche. Get a rack. Who do you think you are? But Dean does it. I'm like, do it again.
Yeah. Like, Dean does it.
So
like,
perfect.
Oh, yeah.
And they were so compact, and it was just so perfect. But yeah,
yeah,
I was going to be like, what is ass? So, you know, further enabling the fact that we as a fandom think Dean can do no wrong.
Yeah. It just reminded me of the preview for next week where, you know, no, I'm sorry, the 15th. Don't want to freak anybody out. What? The 7th? No, it's the 15th, the next episode.
The 15th,
and, you know, it's going to be this huge, dramatic episode with lots of characters and lots of things going on, and we're starting to get into the end of the season, and the entire fandom is, Dean's in the shower! Dean's in the shower! We're like, wee, Dean's in the shower.
Well, you know, it's, you know, here's the thing. As a fan base that watches the CW, we are the ones watching the show that doesn't have their male leads prancing around shirtless all the time. So when it happens for us, it is actually like a national holiday because we are not spoiled by that. We're not the Arrow fandom going,
Or the
Amel has no
people.
Shirt on. Yeah, Amel has no shirt on, or, you know, anybody has no shirt on must be CW. We're going, they got them to take their shirts off? Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, it happens so, so rarely that we do have to mark the occasion.
By flailing about it on Twitter incessantly.
Yes.
I was, when the episode first aired, and everybody was talking about this Dean shower scene. I'm like, I did not see a Dean shower scene in this episode.
She texted me. She goes, what is everybody talking about? You didn't take a shower. I was like, no, preview.
Because I thought I was going crazy. How did I miss a Dean shower scene?
Well, and everybody, like, on my personal Twitter account, I had said, like, ugh, my DVR didn't record it. I'm going to have to wait for it to show up on the website, blah, 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 blah. And everyone's like, oh, that sucks. You haven't seen the preview. And I'm like, oh, no, I watched the preview as soon as you guys started flailing about it everywhere. The preview I see. Trust me.
We're fine.
So... yeah, so she was like, what are they talking about? I was like, I haven't even watched the episode, but it's here. Go look. So we will probably spend the majority of that podcast talking about that. Also, and I say this with a lot of love in my heart. This is kind of, this is still shallow, but changing gears. Of the crew that we've ever met, my biggest meltdown was meeting Jeannie Chow. And, again, something Becky can attest to, where I'm pretty chill about most things, and I just had, like, a complete meltdown meeting her. And,
It was cute.
Like, I met her within 10 minutes of meeting James Marsters, and I was much, much cooler with James Marsters than I was with Jeannie. Much cooler. Yeah. My normal just flew out the window with her. That said, Sam's hair was so painful for me in this episode. Why? Why is it parted and it's like a bouffant and it's just, it's, oh, why? 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 I don't understand.
So, I don't know.
Yes. If I ever see Jeannie again, I'll be like, you know I love you because I freak you out. But can we talk about the hair in this episode? Because no.
No.
Can we go back to season 8 hair, please? Thank you.
Oh, yes, season 8 hair. Such good hair.
Yes. Season 8 hair, never forget. But never, never forget.
We need a memorial page for the season 8. Glorious, glowing, beautiful,
majestic lion mane of hair. The souls, because they did make it a point to, the episode was penned by Adam Glass, and he did make it a point to reference back when Sam had a soul, but I do feel like these people were behaving very differently from Sam.
Mm-hmm.
I
found that they explained it by saying, well, everybody reacts differently. Okay. And Sam did kill without remorse, which was what
he
these people were
remorse,
doing.
But he didn't kill just because people annoyed him.
He was
very logical about it.
Well,
that we know of.
Because we didn't
it was very
much
presented to us. But, you know, in the explanations it was presented to us is that he would take a logical leap. Like, yes, he might use a child as a shield, but he would have a reason for it. Not that that's the right thing to do, but he was very much the ends justify the means. Where these people seem to be like, oh, I'm sorry, I find you very irritating, let me slit your throat.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely different. But we didn't see every day of Sam, and we also didn't see soulless Sam when he first became soulless. So I wonder
if
he was different at the beginning, because these people were freshly soulless, and they also became soulless at a different method as well. So
maybe
that
has something had a very big issue with how this show deals with soullessness, like, okay, so you have no soul, so your biological functions no longer work. You don't sleep, you don't eat, because you have no soul. I have never understood that. So I guess I give it a pass because I've never accepted how this show deals with soullessness. So why try? Why am I going to try now? I don't know. And does Abaddon have some kind of like miracle growth for making souls into demons, because it takes a long time.
Yes, you must go to hell and be tortured for, you know, thousands and thousands of years. So maybe she does have a way to do it more quickly, because if you're going to have an army, it, the faster the better. So
yeah.
Maybe she does. I mean, it's like the nun was harvesting the souls for her, and you don't necessarily tell everybody the entire plan. You get your little tiny piece of it, but nobody knows the overall plan but Abaddon. So maybe there's more to it. Is there a message? I don't know.
I have found it very strange how Dean is very fixated on Abaddon. And at least they're finally bringing in a reason for her to be a real concern, because as much as I enjoy the character, I don't find her to be that big of a concern the way they're making her seem.
I don't get that either. Why isn't Dean more after Gadriel than
Abaddon? Thank you, because that was
Abaddon.
That was the whole point of him going to get the mark. And then as soon as he got the mark, it's like he took on... absorbed Cain's girlfriend issues. Like, why? I don't understand it. This is, while they had never been able to kill Abaddon before, because, you know, they didn't have the means, it's not like they haven't been able to beat her before. They've been able to defeat her.
Mm-hmm.
So, couple that with the fact that the reason Abaddon's a technical threat right now is because they had Crowley locked up in their dungeon. It's not like she just randomly overpowered Crowley. It's kind of their fault.
And she hasn't done anything personally to them, whereas Metatron and Gadriel have done it. And usually that's what makes them go off and get obsessed with people and hunting them down, is because they have messed with them personally. So the fact that he is just letting Gadriel and Metatron go while he focuses on Abaddon, I don't get that part.
Well, it would make sense if it was different in that Crowley had the first blade, and the blade had something to do with
killing Gadriel or getting rid of Metatron, and he said, well, I'll give you the blade, but first you have to help me get rid of Abaddon, and then you can have the blade. It's kind of, if it had been that way, it made a little more, it would have tied in a little bit more. I have no idea why the first blade would be that's like a weapon, but it is a very powerful weapon, and you'd need one to deal with Gadriel and Metatron. So, but it's the way it is. It's just Dean's after Abaddon. But that's Crowley's, you know.
I don't
thing.
Understand. I feel like everybody's fighting the wrong fight.
To focus him on Abaddon?
I feel like everyone's fighting the wrong fight. Like everyone has, it's like a video game and everyone has is fighting the wrong boss level. I don't understand.
And why isn't Sam more angry at Gadriel? Like, why isn't he, like, obsessed with finding Gadriel? Gadriel, I can't say Gadriel. You know, it's like, that's the issue. And, yeah, Sidebar is being angry at Dean. But Dean didn't
Which
know it was
he
Gadriel.
Can't even
and
just,
thought it was
okay, no, wait, I forgot I can't talk about Sam because I'll... I almost voiced an opinion, and we're just not going to do it. So, but, oh, how do I get around that? And okay, no, I don't understand anybody's motivation for anything right now. I don't get it. Except for Crowley. Crowley has every reason to be pissed off at Abaddon and want to go after her or want someone to go after her. He's the only one. Frankly, if he would just kill the Winchesters already, there's 80% of his problem with Abaddon right there. Done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, you know, as much as I love Supernatural, and I know it's on a network where the standard is 23 episodes a season, I can understand other shows that get it done in 13. Because they just pack everything into half the time, so things move more quickly, and I think that's a little bit the way this is. You know, they excuse it by saying, well, all the research, all the lore is a dead end. Well, we may as well work on a case until something breaks with for the season is. And I understand
but
that.
I think Supernatural tends to benefit either when you have either no discernible arc until midpoint, three quarters through, or when they do the kind of bait and switch arc, where you know you think that everything's all wrapped up, like episode 15, and you're like, well, but we still have, okay, and then you find out that no, that's going to lead into something else. This is just that I don't know what the point is. What is the point? Other than Dean gets me really, really, like, hot.
Maybe that is the point.
Because he's all, like, growly and unfeeling and angry and drunk, and I that's just really attractive on him. But I don't understand what anybody or anything else is going on right now.
And like Susan said, you know, there are a lot of TV shows like Sleepy Hollow, Orphan Black, that sort of thing. They have, you know, a really short run, like 12, 13 episodes, and that's it for the season. But then you do have to wait like a whole other year, you know, for them
that's
to come
true.
Back.
Mm-hmm.
With Orphan Black, oh, my God, April 19th is coming back. I can't wait. It's so good.
It's like I just saw the finale of The Walking Dead, and I'm like, October? What do you mean October?
Right.
Well, then you get to your first half of the season and you're done in November, and they're like, so coming in mid-February, you're like, oh, God, really?
Yeah.
You know, then there's Vampire Diaries on CW, which, first of all, Supernatural is way far superior to Vampire Diaries. Don't think I'm comparing them the two because I'm not. Supernatural is the superior show. But
I've never watched Vampire Diaries, so...
With Vampire Diaries, they do have 22, 23 episodes a season, whatever. And they don't have filler episodes. Basically, every one of their episodes goes along with the story arc. you know, I have, but they don't have any just, you know, oh, let's go off and do something completely different this episode.
Well,
which makes it less fun because you don't get the fun episodes like changing channels, you know, the French Mistake, that sort of thing. You don't get those fun episodes.
I was
they have a bigger cast.
That's true.
They have a bigger cast and more stories, so they do have more to
deal
with.
But I think also,
you know?
I think, how do I say this? I'm going to put this in a really vague way. I think sometimes we confuse filler episodes because they don't directly go, look, here's the arc, when it's not really a filler, per se. Like, you can easily say, I just had a complete blackout, the fish taco episode.
Bird.
Thank you. You could say that's filler, but I don't think that it is. It's not filler. There was clearly heavy anvils of point there. Same thing with sharp teeth. Very heavy anvils of point. So I think sometimes we call it filler because it doesn't involve Crowley, Abaddon, Bartholomew at the time. You're not directly getting that connection. And so we sit there and go, oh, well, this is filler. But it's not. Because in reality, that's how the show began. That is the real show. You know what I mean? Am I explaining that right?
I get it. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to explain without sounding like a total jerk. It's not the easiest thing to do. I don't mean it in a jerk way. But I think that sometimes we've just come to, because of the evolution the show has taken, we kind of come to forget that that's closer to the root of the show than what we think is. And so now what we call filler isn't really filler. It's the actual show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I like episodes like that. It's like the episode where they don't mention anything about anything, you know, like that's going on, like the Mark of Cain or whatever. But I don't mind a taste episode that furthers those things or at least talks about them somehow. We have a caller. We have a caller who's been waiting a few minutes. So, I actually think it's more a Skyper. I'm going to put them on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello, I'd like to, I gotta say, though, those damn Islams ruining the show. You know, I turn on my TV, and all I see are these anti-white commercials. Just makes
me... Okay, please hang up on them.
I ain't gonna hang up, lady.
Sorry about that. Moving on.
Okay.
Wow.
That wasn't funny.
What's that?
I feel like that was our Bob from Chattanooga on The Talking Dead. That was our Bob from Chattanooga right there.
Bob from Chattanooga was so good.
Yeah.
We were due. It has been a long time, so we were due.
Yeah. It happens once in a while. We got drunk dialed from the UK one time, as I recall, and we went on and on about a lot of stuff that really had nothing to do with Supernatural. But it happens every now and then. Anyway.
Thank you, Bob from Chattanooga.
You know, don't call us, we'll call you.
But really.
But, no.
I don't even know where to go right now.
So, I know, seriously.
Well, I was going to say that I just thought of just a beautiful visual in this episode was the souls in the jars. Shout out to the visual effects department. Those great guys. I like the souls in the jars. And then when Sam let them loose and the souls knew where to go back, which seems they knew very easily. And again, I think that's part of Sam's being soulless
very different than these people being soulless, maybe the process, because for Sam to get his soul back, it was very traumatic.
But that was because
his soul
been,
was still,
you know,
in hell, so I think that's the big difference.
It was still in hell, and it was also the realization for everyone that his soul wasn't in good condition.
Yes.
His
souls were fairly newly taken, so nothing had been done. They were just sort of waiting in the jar.
And they weren't
the jar.
Tortured. They were just hanging out. Yeah, they were just hanging out in the jar.
Yeah. But I thought that was really cool about them going back to their people. And usually that effect when mist or smoke or whatever leaves a character or comes in or goes, it's very traumatic for them. You know, they shake and scream and often it's demon smoke. But this time with the soul, I thought it was very peaceful. It was just a return. And that was a nice difference as well.
I'm going to be the one dissenting opinion on this. And my caveat is going to be that it's not that I don't think the VFX department didn't do it well. They did what they did well. I just didn't like it. It looked like a glowing fairy. Like, I would have liked something. I would have liked something wispier, or possibly invisible. I didn't like it being this glowing firebug kind of thing. So, like I said, it's not that they didn't do it well, because they did what they did well. It's just that it wasn't. I've always agreed with, like, what Kripke said, you know, the hellhounds were scary because you couldn't see them.
Mm.
And sometimes I think something's also, the flip side of that is something more beautiful when you don't see it. So I would have liked something much more gauzy, wispy, than such a condensed ball of light. But that's just a personal opinion.
That's pretty much the way we saw it previously, though. You know, when Death brought Sam's soul back to him, he had in his hand, it was a ball of light in his hand.
Yeah, that's why I said they did what they did well, and it was within, you know, it was the continuity. It's just something I've never actually liked for the soul.
And I think
then the demon's smoke really shouldn't be visible either. It's a tortured soul.
Well, no, but see,
the
smoke is such an impact. And it's smoke. So we see it as it's a dense smoke. This is like a condensed ball of light. I don't know. It's just weird for me. It always has been. I just think it should be wispier. I want it wispy.
Damn it.
Isn't your soul wispy? Because my soul is very wispy.
Maybe everybody's soul looks different. Maybe as if the souls had spent more time away from their meat suit, for lack of a better expression, they would get wispier over time without a physical presence to affect
maybe
them.
Maybe it's like somehow. Maybe it's like losing weight. You know, the longer you're away from the body, the more weight your soul loses.
I can work with that.
Okay.
Yeah. The judges will accept that.
At least they weren't, like, sparkly and, you know, and that sort of crazy thing. I suppose it's somewhat similar is when they show a soul going to heaven, going to the light, and you don't really see it. It's like Bobby Patricia Helfer's character in Roadkill, where they finally move on.
Molly.
And they finally move on, and we don't really actually see them, their body turning into it, but we just see the light and the reflection and the reaction of the other people, and that's a really beautiful, cool effect to me. So maybe something like that you were going for, kind of. So we have body soul. Go ahead.
Kind of along the same lines, I was going to say I really liked how in the one where Death Goes on Holiday. What was it? I couldn't remember the name of it the other day, the last time we were talking about it on a podcast. With Tessa the Reaper, she came back and she was reaping the little boy who was the last person to die in that town. I liked how basically she, I thought it was beautifully done, how she, how Tessa just basically absorbed the little boy into herself. I always thought that was just beautiful.
Mm. Yeah. That is really cool.
Reaper's on vacation. That's a holiday. And I always want to say, Reaper's on vacation.
Reaper's gone wild, what? Spring break Reapers.
Yeah. So by now we've got 180 some titles to remember.
Remember back when the show had only been on for 2 or 3 years? I don't know about you, but like what I would do at night when if I couldn't sleep is I would lay in bed and I would try and think up the titles in order, and you know that's how I would fall asleep. And it's like, oh my God, now there's no way in the 9 seasons.
Might be up all night.
Right.
Yeah. My best friend and I used to do that to each other randomly. One of us would just go pilot, and we would start doing them. For some reason, we'd always, no matter who said pilot, the other one would go, and forget Wendigo every time. But once we got past Wendigo, we could do it all. And somewhere around season 5 to 6, we just went, I can't do this anymore. And we used to do it with Buffy, too. And if there's something about once you hit past, like, 5 seasons of a show, you're just season 7, episode 22, the one with, because it's, which actually, no, that's Survival of the Fittest. But anyway.
It's the one where the Reapers go on vacation.
Yeah, Spring Break Reapers.
Spring Break Reapers. Oh, dear.
But I already have, I will say, I have trouble, which we just noticed when I said, you know, the one with the fish taco. I already have trouble with season 9. It's just, it's so difficult at this point to remember all the episodes. So
it
it's
is.
Always really cool to me when someone throws, when someone throws an episode out at like Jared and Jensen and they're like, oh yeah. And I'm like, how do you know? Because the Buffy cast, when they used to do that with the Buffy cast, they couldn't even do past season 1. They're like, I don't know. So I've always thought that was really, really cool that Jared and Jensen can do it. Because, you know, I can't.
Well, it is a lot, but you know what? It's their job. It's part of their job description to remember things, to have a good memory. So that's why I'm impressed that they remember titles or remember fans' names, like, you know, and things, because there's so many of us and just a couple of them. But I'm impressed, but I'm not surprised, because that's in their job description. And they're very, very good at their job. So, for any actor. So, But, I have the same thing. It's like you get to past 5th or 6th season of a show, and I'm done. There's occasionally some episodes stand out. Maybe the title is just particularly memorable, so there's a couple. But at a certain point, And not just Supernatural, like you're saying, Buffy, same thing. I can remember a ton of Buffy titles and everything, and then it just gets to a point where, nope, there anymore.
Or you can't do it in order anymore. Like, I can still do Buffy through season 7, but I'm pass, skip, pass. Wait, did that come before that one, or was it that one? No, it's that one. So, you know. There are episode titles from season 6 and 7 that I can do. Right now, I can't think of a single season 8 title. Wow. But the point is it gets hard. We need to talk about Kevin. There we go. Boom, season 8. I don't know.
Drinking again, drinking a lot.
He's drinking a lot.
Well, you know, he wasn't for a long time, or was drinking
a
little bit of whiskey with Sam at the end of a case or something, but he's back to
But he hadn't been, like, binge-drinking alcoholic, because supposedly purgatory, like, super cleansed him, like, instant AA.
Mm-hmm.
And now, although I thought it was really interesting, and I would love to know if it was just because, you know, job well done, you get a beer. But the last scene with Sam and Dean, well, since Dean is hiding his drinking, he's not drinking anything, and you have it very obvious that Sam has a beer with him.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know if that's something Adam had in the script or something Misha decided to do for, you know, some kind of counterbalance. I don't know. Misha, if you're listening, feel free to either call in or schedule yourself as a guest so that we can pick your brain about it. Thanks.
Yeah.
you can come on our podcast anytime you'd like. Open invitation.
Yes. The door is always open.
Yes. But until that happens, I guess we can. Hopefully, someone will ask it. There's a lot I'd like to pick Misha's brain about for this episode. As a director, because it's always fun to have directors. Like whenever we've had Guy, and you get to find, you know, all the little things that they put in that you sometimes don't even notice and why they do it. And
mm-hmm.
I would love to know what Misha's little ticks were, what he chose to be his Easter eggs, you know. I would really like to know that.
Yeah, because Guy is awesome for putting those in. So, yeah, I'd like to know
mm-hmm.
if Misha put any.
And I can imagine that Misha would be, it's something that would interest Misha a lot to do that, because he just seems like the kind that would be like, tee-hee, I put that there kind of thing. So
mm-hmm.
I would really,
yeah.
really, really like to know.
Me too.
Okay, so I'm going to say this. Again, I feel like all I'm doing is full disclosure and caveat and disclaimer. So my disclaimer is that I'd watched the first 20 minutes of the episode the Wednesday after it aired. And I watched the last 22 minutes or whatever, I don't know, math is hard, the rest right before this podcast. So I had over a week gap. I watched this episode. Took me over a week to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So I
was
think I missed
difficult?
Something. No, no, no. I just had a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
And because I had to watch it on my computer, it makes me lazier to do that instead of watching it on my actual TV through my DVR. It just makes me a little bit lazier to do so. And I get I'm really, really distracted. I'm like, oh, what's on YouTube? Let's pause and move on. But I've just had a really, really, really busy week or so. So I may have missed something. but Agnes was just a disciple of Abaddon, right? That's why even when Abaddon left her, she still continued to carry on. Huh?
She didn't age?
Well, no. Like, why didn't she age? And why did she speak in 1958 like it was 2007?
Wasn't she a demon?
Abaddon was
demon.
In her. Okay, but why would demons even speak that way back then? Like, she was like, ain't? And then when we came back to her, this, she's like, ah, heck? And I'm like, this is a very weird verbal tick you have. But I don't know if I missed something. It's really weird, and I didn't quite, again, where I paused and picked up. So when Abaddon was in her and then Abaddon was out of her and she told her play dead, what was she when Abaddon was out of her?
Okay, see, there were two.
Because it wasn't the normal exorcism.
There were two nuns. There was a nun Abaddon was in. There was a nun Abaddon was in, and then there was a lower-level demon who is possessing a different nun.
Okay. All right. All nuns look alike.
And the lower level demon, you know, stayed there. That was the one that Sam went and fought at the end. She was the one taking care of all the souls in the jars.
Okay, so I'm confused too. Yep. That's why I said, you know, I had to be honest that I was paying more attention to certain things than not things. And when I say certain things, I mean Dean and Crowley.
Yeah.
I was just far more invested in that. So.
Well, speaking of nuns, we should talk about the wonderful Jenny O'Hara playing Sister Julia, who didn't stay a nun. And Jenny O'Hara played her, of course, as an older woman who left the convent. And she's an amazing character actress, and she did a great job. I liked her with Sam. They had a very nice chemistry. Can you talk about the scene with
Sam? Are you
Sam?
Can you talk about that, Vinny?
You all can feel free. Feel free. I will sit here and listen. If I just listen, I don't black out.
Well, she actually, this has nothing to do with Sam, but the character reminded me a lot of when I was in elementary school, my best friend in fourth and fifth grade, her mother used to be a nun. Yeah, and so, you know, I've never known of any, you know, I was only in fourth and fifth grade, so I hadn't known many people anyways. But, you know, at that point, I'd never known anybody who had, you know, was a nun and was not any longer. So she and the Sister O'Hara here, she even, Wilkinson, whatever her name was, she reminded me a lot of my friend Elaine's mom. They dressed alike, talked alike, you know, they're very similar.
But really good.
Oh,
all
and
the nuns,
the,
I know we're still nuns.
Sorry?
The building that they used for St. Bonaventure has also been used several times in Supernatural. Children shouldn't, no. It's the one in second season with all the dolls and, you know.
Playthings.
I always want to say children shouldn't play with dead things, but that was the one with the zombie girl, and they're so confusing. Okay, but yeah, that was the hotel.
Yes.
And it's been used a bunch of times. It's the one where the old lady flirted and danced with Sam in Red Sky in season three. And just, yeah, that building's been used a lot.
I always want to call Red Sky Red Mist in the morning every time.
That would be scary, some red mist. That would be scary.
Yeah. I always want to call it Red Mist morning. You're like, that's not even close.
I wonder if, well, I guess, okay, so the demon nun had been gathering these souls and keeping an eye on things all this time because she was still dressed as a nun. But Jenny O'Hara's character, she came to the sheriff and she said, they're back. Those demons are back. I wonder, she didn't notice anything before? Has she always lived there in that close proximity to the convent where all this horrible things happened to her, and there's still a demon nun? And I wonder if that's the first time she'd gone to the sheriff's apartment and said that. Now, she was talking to a younger deputy, so if she had been there before, it wasn't to him that she probably spoke to. But
Sure. Beats me. I have no idea.
Not sure. Very off topic, but still, because you reminded me when you were talking about the jail or the station. I really, really, really enjoyed how disturbing the people in the cells were. even when he hung himself, and, you know, the guy banging his head on the bars and, you know, just writing on the walls in your own blood.
And scraping
really
your fingers to do it. I mean, they just kept scraping their hands over and over.
And that's,
to
that's
make the blood,
that I'm
to
not,
make the words.
That's one of my big, like, oh my God. But one more being is a shapeshifter. Skin. Skin. When he changes and he breaks his fingernails on the, so that's one of those things I'm not good about. Mm-hmm. But I like that. I like being disturbed. I like being scared, or I like when things attempt to disturb me or scare me. It doesn't happen very often. So I really liked that Adam went there. I really did like that.
Yeah, they were super creepy.
And the episode this year, the Kim Rhodes came back on, and Dean and the virgins were underground. Remember, they showed the girl scraping her fingernails on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
On that one?
Yes.
Oh,
I had to look away.
Horrible.
I had to look away. Or even in a very supernatural Christmas when they're pulling thumbs and they all anything that's fingernails, eyeballs, I just, oh, no.
Yeah.
That's rough.
Yeah.
That's rough.
Yeah, that's a tough one. But
in a good way. Keep doing it, guys. Thanks.
Yeah. It was really, really, really creepy. And it's tough after 9 seasons to think of new things to be really creepy and scary and icky like that. The souls came back to everyone who'd had it taken, but at least one of them was dead, so there was no body for that soul to go back to.
Well, that poor
soul's
just floating around because you can't get into heaven.
Can't get into heaven. Now, would that soul go to hell because she was a murderer?
Or will it be stuck in the veil? Will it be stuck in the veil?
Is it stuck in the veil?
Well,
the
soul didn't murder anybody. The soul's an innocent.
Yeah, the soul wasn't even around.
Nope.
So
poor soul.
Get into heaven, but can they get into hell, or are they just stuck no matter where they're headed?
I think you can get into, well, I don't think. You can get into hell. You just can't get into heaven.
Okay. And I wonder if those souls are getting crazy because, you know, the longer the spirit stays on Earth or out of where it's supposed to go, it starts to get twisted. And I
would imagine.
So I wonder.
Only because this scene popped up on the, it's running while I'm talking with you guys. The best thing in the whole entire episode was when Sam was getting choked. And he pulls out a phone with a recorded exorcism on it. I love so much. The first time that when that aired that night, I about cracked up because it's like Sam knows that he gets choked so much that he needs that exorcism recorded.
That was very awesome. All I can think is,
yeah, there's an app for that.
Yeah, it was very much one of those thank you for making fun of yourself, writers kind of thing.
Yes.
And I forget who, because somebody asked Adam about it, and he actually attributed the idea to somebody else, and I can't remember who it was.
Well, whoever it was, I want to send them a basket of cookies or something, because it was awesome.
It was. It really was. It's as wonderful a moment as the recording of the exorcism over the entire jail for Justin Bellow.
Right.
Yep, and then putting the rosary in the sprinkler system.
No Rest for the Wicked?
Something with No Rest for the Wicked. Okay.
Yeah.
You know what? It's like the podcast. We're like playing charades tonight.
I swear, guys, we're usually much better at this. If you're a new listener, I promise you we're much better than this usually.
I know. Like, and, you know, if there isn't already one, there should be like a hunter's app, because you could put the exorcism in there, you know, you could put all sorts of handy spells in the app. You know, you don't have to lug around all those books.
Like
an app on your phone.
The phone exorcism. Yeah, according to Adam, the phone exorcism was Andrew Dobbs.
He's awesome.
Yes,
I'm surprised.
Even if he is abandoning us for other pastures, whatever. But at least we will get one more episode penned by him, so. Sorry, I didn't mean to break down the room there. Sorry.
I like the sheriff, the older sheriff in this episode. I love when the town law enforcement is just so like skeptical of anything odd happening, or they just roll with it. Because Sam says, "Well, you know, was there anything else unusual? Did you smell sulfur?" And he just turns around and looks at Sam like, "Why would I smell sulfur? You know, like, what's wrong with you, son? You know, how'd you get that FBI badge kind of attitude?" You know, I enjoy that. And it's like in Here We Go Again, Charades, one with, was it Larkin the Real Girl? They're, like, in the Renaissance Fair, and that sheriff says, you know, oh, these kids these days, you know, but they're...
Or they're texting and they're murdered.
Texting and murder.
Yes.
You know, it's the same kind of thing. It wasn't even phased. That's a great point.
I feel like we're just starting every episode like it's Psych, the one with the.
Mm-hmm.
We're very friends today. Like, you know, the one with the, oh, God, that one.
Yeah. It's all twisted. With people killing everyone and drawing in blood.
Okay,
all
but
over
that's
the
not helpful.
Yeah, that's true.
The
it
one
barely
with
narrows
all the
it
blood.
Down.
The one with the blood.
Yeah, barely narrows it down.
Then being upset, and then he's you know, drinking. You know.
Oh, yeah, that one. Okay,
yeah, I would have put something about Sam, but then again, rage blackout, so let's not do that.
Oh. Well, there's another little scene that I loved, and I'm sorry if Sam's in it. I have to talk about it, but it's just...
No, you can talk
the
about
scene.
Him all you want.
You know, I'm just going to call you Summer Roberts until the end of the season.
I like it. Oh, yes. Sam Winchester is my new Seth Cohen.
Fantastic. Oh, welcome to the OC.
glorious.
Yes. Anyway, the scene where I think it's Billy, the kid who went into the diner and he stabbed that poor waitress in the hand with a knife, but like, oh my God, that was horrible. But two things about that: Sam had a salad to eat. You know, whatever else is going on, you know, all's right with the world if Sam is having a salad. And it also, it's one of my favorite things where we can sometimes see that third party outsider view of somebody else seeing Sam or Dean, not like how we know they are, but just how incredibly fast and badass they can be. Because, you know, he took Billy down with that knife in like half a second, and he looked like he would not be able to do that at all. He's sitting there in a suit eating a salad. Like, you go right on by, you'd never even guess that he could be as badass as he is. And you can imagine the other people in the diner and the waitress thinking, wow, you know.
From zero everybody went home with a story to tell that night.
Yeah. So, yeah, I enjoyed that. Actually, the waitress is his mom. Just remember that.
See, that kind of Sam I can totally talk about. We're fine. Everything's
okay.
Fine.
Whenever Sam is eating salad, I have to think back to Flash Fiction where the Sam and Dean Leviathans are eating, and the Sam Leviathan calls the dead plants with creamy goo. It's like eating self-righteousness. That is
I love that.
A good line.
That is one of my favorite lines in the series.
Dead plants with creamy goo. Sounds delicious.
I feel like I should have more to say about this episode, and I honestly don't. I feel like there wasn't a whole lot of progression in it, which I feel like seems to be the theme of season 9. I feel like season 9 is a treadmill. You're running, and you're running, but you're not, I'm not getting anywhere.
But I'm exhausted. I will say that I am quite exhausted. I don't necessarily mean that in a bad way, because I think there have been some really standout moments and episodes. But like I said before, I have no idea where we're... That's not true. I have an idea where we're going. I have theories, of course. But if I'm wrong, I'm going to burn down everything.
Oh, no.
I'm wrong. There was no point. I'm wrong. 23 episodes of no point. Give me this year back. But if I'm right, bravo. Well played, writers. So it all hinges on 22 and 23 for me. But, it's going to be season 9 on a treadmill. That's what I want to call it.
Again, I think it's that. It's just you're stuck. You've got 23 hours to fill. But, I'm okay. I mean, I like this episode, but you're right. I mean, something's happened. We got a little bit more things, but I'm not sure what else to discuss. I think
I feel like the most progression we got was confirmation of what we already thought, was that Crowley is playing Dean, he's manipulating Dean, which we already knew. So I feel like, like I say, we're just getting confirmation of what we already know and more depth in that. And, in a couple different interviews, we've had different people say, this is the parallels of season 4, and Crowley is Dean's Ruby. And this episode made it very, very apparent. Not only do you get the parallel of that Dean is, air quote, cheating on Sam with Crowley, huge air quotes around that, because Crowley makes
fingers.
That joke. Yeah. Crowley makes the joke multiple times, but, you also, the manipulation, because that's what Ruby did so well, was just that really quiet manipulation of Sam that Dean is doing, that Crowley is doing to Dean.
Yes. And this one, was when I was happy to see Henry Winchester again. And it was fun to find out where Josie and Abaddon actually came from. But I like Henry. I think Gil McKenney does a great job. And it was kind of fun to see him dressed as a priest because, again, it's a Winchester family tradition.
And it's a good time.
Speaking of Winchester traditions, what was Sam's FBI name? I thought I heard Agent Leiter. Could you tell? Because, they're always fun.
I really did not pay attention to that. I'm going to be completely honest.
I thought it was.
I might have had a rage blackout just because he was on screen.
Okay.
Was he on the phone at the same time that he was saying his name? Because that might have attributed to a rage blackout right there.
Was Lighter. He was talking to the sheriff, right?
No, I was being sarcastic.
His FBI alias was Lighter, L-E-I-T-E-R, and I think I think I'm not 100% sure, but I think there was a James Bond character named Lighter.
There is Felix Leiter. He was an American, I believe, CIA agent that Bond worked with in several books. He was in, if you watch the Daniel Craig movies, he was in Casino Royale. I really liked him. He looks very different in the movies than he does in the books. And Felix Leiter, it's like the star of the chapter that has the best title ever, because in the Bond books, sorry, spoiler alert, Felix Leiter loses an arm to a shark because one of the Bond bad guys keeps one in a tank. And I'm sorry, I can't think of the name of the book right now. But the name of the chapter was, he disagreed with something that ate him. It's always been one of those wonderful things, you know, beautiful words. But anyway, yes, Felix Leiter was a James Bond character. When he said lighter, I thought he was maybe thinking Star Wars, because Sam's the kind of geek, and he's used Wedge Antilles, and I thought, well, Darklighter, big Darklighter. But it was James Bond this time.
Which makes sense, because Sam isn't really... You know, you always get the idea that Sam's not the one that comes up with the musical aliases. Although I'd like to believe that he was responsible for the Fleetwood Mac one, but that's neither here nor there. But I'd like to believe that that was all Sam.
That would be fun. Oh. We have a caller. Hello, caller. I'm sorry you've been waiting a bit. I'm going to put you on. Area code 719.
Hello.
719.
Hello. Hi. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Hi. Have a question or a comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to know you guys' opinions on something. In this episode, I just wanted to know what you thought about what happened to Henry's wife, Millie. Because they just mentioned her name in this episode, and we didn't really know anything about her, and we still don't.
Yeah, this was the first time we heard her name, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, we've never heard anything about her before, so I just wanted to know what you guys think might have happened to her.
That's a good question.
That is a great question. I think it could be one of those things where it's, you know, they put up, like, I don't know, little index cards or little notes on their whiteboard, and they say, you know, Mrs. Millie Winchester, and we just haven't gotten to her yet. But, yeah, she's definitely someone to speculate about. How much did she know about Henry? How much did she know anything about what he truly was? Was she just, I shouldn't say just, but at the time, she could be a housewife. She's Sam and Dean's grandmother. So
I feel bad that I actually hadn't really thought about her, and I wonder.
Yeah, yeah, because I was wondering about that. Like, do you think she could still be alive? Maybe.
I would.
I wouldn't see her. Because surely to goodness we'd have seen her somewhere by now. She was still alive.
Yeah.
No, because you always get the idea that. Yeah, you always get the idea that Sam and Dean, you know, was it that they didn't have any family, or was it that John just separated from, you know, all ties? Would be interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm curious about that, too.
I would think that, this is going to sound really morbid in a way, but I would like, I don't mean this way it's going to come out, I swear. I would like to think that by the time Mary died, that she was dead as well. But I say that because it would make me worry that either that the demon would have gone after her, or something would have used her against John and the boys at a very young age.
Yeah, that's true.
And so more in a way of, for her own safety, I hope she was dead. You know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It sounds cool to say, but that's what I would say.
Okay.
It would be interesting to maybe have a flashback of her.
Yeah, that
know,
would be
maybe,
cool.
Maybe of Dean, of her knowing Dean, like, right when Sam was born, or Dean having this really foggy memory of his grandma kind of thing. That would be interesting.
That would be cool.
I would be really interested in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then also, I was wondering if you guys thought that the way Henry essentially, like, abandoned Millie, if that, like, kind of affected the way that Millie raised John.
Mm-hmm.
And then, in turn, how John raised Sam and Dean. How it was kind of like a family thing, how they'd all been, like, abandoned.
Mm-hmm. It was, like, continued the cycle. Because it wasn't Henry's intention to abandon her.
Right, but,
he
like,
just,
I just think maybe Millie thought that he did, because if she didn't
You know, you get
you
the
know,
impression of what John, what, the way John acts about it from what he knew.
Yeah.
Because he didn't know he was a legacy. That he and Millie were quite bitter about it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, she could have married
Dan, which had been the headcanon speculation for a lot of people, that when John speaks about his father, he really means stepfather. And there's just, you know, but we don't know for sure at this point, so it's hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can't really mourn someone that you don't know, you know, you don't know something happened, and you just think they're gone. They abandoned me. So I could definitely see some resentment on her part.
Okay, yeah.
But, you know, given that we already know, you know, we know we're getting a season 10, it would be something interesting since they're really being, you know, they really seem to be diving into their past on the Winchester side, or before it was very much their past on the Campbell side. I would really enjoy seeing something to call back to her.
Yeah, I would really like to see that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a nice little seed, you know, threw it out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, season 10, definitely more now that we've met Henry, maybe we'll get scenes with him and Millie and find out more about, like you say, how she dealt with losing Henry and John.
Yeah, like how did
and
she
it,
deal
and
with
it? And
it
explaining why John was the way he was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So maybe we'll have season 10, time for a grandma.
Yeah. That would be cool.
Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Do you have any other questions or comments?
No, that was it.
Okay.
Yeah, that was it. Thank you.
Well, thank you for giving us something to chew on.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah. I'm glad you brought up Millie.
I feel kind of bad. Yeah, I feel kind of bad because I completely forgotten about that moment.
Ooh. Watching it, I was like, oh, wow, we have a first name for grandma. And just
Millie Winchester.
Right out of my head. Yes. Millie, very much a name of the 50s, too.
Mm-hmm.
Millie. Mm-hmm. And Josie.
I love that Josie was kind of like, well, not kind of. She was an anomaly to be a woman of letters, which is not only something that would be an anomaly now, but in the 50s even. Like, I think that's really neat. It's just one of those things that I think is.
Yeah, and Henry certainly treated her as an equal. I don't know if all of them did, but he certainly did. So, and I wonder.
Well,
I wonder
you
was
get
she,
the idea.
Hmm?
She went. I think if you notice, the Winchesters are always, unless it's a female who's a demon, and then, you know, Dean just no holds barred, but they're very, you always get the idea that the Winchesters find women just extremely competent. It's not that you're a woman, it's just, can you do the job? And if you can do the job, I care what your gender is. Which, you know, for such a male-dominated cast and having only the two leads being male, and the issues that do arise with the show at times, whether you agree with them or not, is debatable, but that seems to be quite the constant within the narrative. Clearly, the Men of Letters also seems to think, as long as you can competently do the job, we don't care.
Although when Dorothy showed up in the Wizard of Oz episode this year, she was shocked to see Charlie, because she felt like the Men of Letters didn't. Yeah.
But Dorothy was a jerk. You know, and again, it kind of comes down to those things where you think, well, was it so much the Men of Letters? Did they disregard her because she was a woman or because she was a jerk? I think it's because she was a jerk. I mean, she redeemed herself within the episode, but she started off as a jerk. Well, I don't think there's much more to say.
I
think
we're
going to
say, is there anything else?
The only thing I can think of that I wanted to mention was that our Facebook page reached 500,000 likes this week. That's huge. Almost, you know, that's 500,000 likes. We're right now at 512,000 likes. So thank you, everybody who follows us over there on Facebook, and those who follow us on Twitter, too. It's just humbling, and we really do appreciate every one of you. Even Bob from Chattanooga.
Very impressive.
If our Bob from Chattanooga does follow us on Facebook or Twitter, we appreciate you too.
We may not agree with you and strongly dislike what you say, but
but you matter as a person, as a human being.
And on Twitter, I believe we're closing in on 140,000 followers, which is very cool. Very cool. Any
very
supernatural news? Yes. Any supernatural news, events, charities, anything we need to mention?
Kind of in the middle of a 3-week hiatus dry spell.
Yep. Next new episode,
of course,
April 15th. Also in the United States, is Income Tax Day. So.
And, oh, well, Kevin Parks.
Oh, yeah, Kevin's Bride to Conquer Cancer.
So their donations can be placed.
Right.
I heard Dean takes a shower in a couple weeks.
Yes, yes, he does.
Should be interesting. Should be interesting.
Yeah. Misha Collins won the social media showdown. He beat Norman Reedus, who was one of the most gracious losers I've ever seen.
I know, right?
Yeah, it was lovely. He was like, you know, well played, and just love you guys. So I thought that was
Norman's a big sweetie.
I've never met him, but I think he's pretty awesome. He's very interesting and quirky and good. So he seems very grateful.
I tend to not be a poll person. I just don't have the patience for polls. It's just not in me. Hats off to people who actually vote in the polls and vote more than once.
because not only do I forget, but I just, I'm so easily distracted that I'm like, oh, I'm supposed to vote for something? Whatever. So that would have been really difficult for me because, you know, I'm a Norman Reedus fan from Boondock Saints days, you know, and then, you know, have, you know, being a Walking Dead fan too, I've been like, one vote for you, one vote for you, one vote for you, one vote for you. I just can't.
Yeah, some of those are really, that was a hard one.
It's better that I am the person that's going to vote for what? What's going on? There's a poll? Didn't we just do a poll? Why are there always polls?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of polls, and I tend not to. I mean, sometimes I vote, but I pick and choose, and I don't go too crazy. And that was a tough one because I love Norman and I love Misha, and they're both a lot of fun on Twitter. So it's like, whatever. Get anything for winning those bragging rights for, you know, an hour or so till the next poll pops up.
Exactly. It's such an, I feel like it's got to be such an empty win because the minute you're like, I won. Wait, what poll now? Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so on to the next. So, yeah. But congratulations for Misha because, you know, when family wins, family wins.
Yeah, and I'm enjoying the, I don't even know what to call it, some kind of relationship between Misha and William Shatner on Twitter, which
I'm so perplexed about how William Shatner and Orlando Jones are in our fandom. What happened? We went from the show that nobody had ever heard of to William Shatner. How?
I know, and my dream guest stars for next year are William Shatner and Orlando Jones. You know,
I would pass it. Not even just the that William Shatner's like, oh, Jared, that's Misha, but then he's just completely CW boy now. Like, how are you watching all the CW shows? What is going on?
I know he was carrying on about Star-Crossed.
Arrow, like everything. What's going on? It's so perplexing to me. I'm like, but you're William Shatner. You realize that, right? Like, you do commercial with Kaley Cuoco.
Yeah, and Jim Beaver organizing a DishWiz team.
Yes. I don't even know, like, what universe this is, but it is parallel to something because I don't even know how all this happened, but I find it hilarious and fascinating. I don't even know what to do with it.
It's like in the real universe, Supernatural got canceled in season 2. You know?
Yeah, but in this alternate universe, we're going into season 10, and William Shatner is a fan.
Yeah, okay. I like this universe better.
Yeah, we'll stay here. I don't understand it, but we'll stay here.
Yeah. That's good. I think that's it.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody, for listening very, very much. I meant to mention, not only can you find podcast information on Media Blog Talk Radio, Media Boulevard, and our website, but you can also subscribe and download through iTunes, which is always handy, and we appreciate all our listeners, and we'll be back with a new podcast after the next new episode, which airs on April 15th. I hear tell someone's in the shower in that episode.
Spoiler alert. Jensen's wet and has no shirt.
Yeah, Jensen's wet and there's tattoos.
Continuity. Love continuity.
Yeah. And
so,
speaking of Jensen Ackles, you have something to do while Supernatural is doesn't have a new episode. We have lots of podcasts from the past, many great special guests, including Jensen Ackles, one of the most recent ones. You can find all those links at winchesterbros.com or in
and Misha Collins. Who's a podcast is a year and a half old and is due for a new one. Just saying. Misha.
Just saying. Yep, Misha. And there's someone who hasn't been on
There is. You know, in the top three, there is. We're missing someone. So it's about that time.
I don't know how to talk about Sam. This could not be a good idea, possibly. But we will keep you guys posted on Facebook and Twitter. And that's it?
That's it. Good night. Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.